Welcome to At the Organ, a weekly show about the classical organ and its music, heard on organlive.com every Sunday or streaming from our website anytime. Just point your browser to attheorgan.com for more information. Now, let's hear what's happening this week at the organ.
Hello, and thank you for joining me today on At the Organ. My name is Brent Johnson, and today is Sunday, February 28th, 2016. Next Sunday, on March 6th, we will be coming to you live from Ladue Chapel Presbyterian Church in Ladue, Missouri. That's a suburb just to the west of St. Louis. And the church there has recently completed the installation of a new Schoenstein & Company pipe organ. It's Schoenstein's Opus 167, a 3-manual and 46-rank instrument. The dedication recital will be performed by Scott Detra, director of music at the Church of the Incarnation in Dallas, Texas, and a highlight of his program will be the premiere performance of a partita on Nun Docet Orlegat by Craig Phillips. You can hear the concert live by tuning in at organlive.com. The concert begins at 3 o'clock Central Time. That's 1 p.m. on the West Coast, 2100 in London, and if you're in Sydney, Australia, it's 8 a.m. Monday morning. You can use that to figure out when it will be on where you are. Our broadcast will begin shortly before 3 o'clock with some words about the program and the organ from Scott Detra, David Irwin, the organist of Ladue Chapel, some of the men who built and installed the organ, as well as Jack Bethards, president of Schoenstein & Company. We expect that to start about 2:30 Central Time. There is the possibility that we will be able to rebroadcast the concert at a later date. However, Mr. Detra is the one who gets to decide that, so we won't know until after the live broadcast. Last summer, we did a series of episodes that culminated in an episode about Jack Bethards and his company. So to get us in the mood for next Sunday's broadcast, we thought we would play that one again. So here it is. Schoenstein is the largest and oldest pipe organ builder in the western United States. The company was founded in 1877 by Felix Schoenstein, but as you'll hear, their history dates back even farther than that. The company started building and rebuilding small instruments mainly in California, and thrived especially after the 1906 San Francisco earthquake. But under the leadership of company owner and president Jack Bethards, they have become an internationally known organ builder. A few notable recent instruments include the LDS Conference Center in Salt Lake City, St. Paul's Parish in Washington, D.C., which we're hearing right now, and the Schermerhorn Symphony Center in Nashville, Tennessee, home of the Nashville Symphony. We got in touch with Jack because we wanted to learn more about their instrument installed in First Plymouth Congregational Church in Lincoln, Nebraska. We heard all about that last week. If you didn't hear it, you can find it on our website at theorgan.com. With Jack on the phone, we thought we would give him a chance to tell us a little about himself and the company he runs and the organs they build. I started, as I always do, by asking him how he came to be interested in building organs.
I got interested in pipe organs when I was about 12 or 13 years old. This company that I now own came and rebuilt the organ in our church, and I watched them with great fascination and especially interested in all the mechanical aspects. What they were doing was electrifying a mechanical action organ, which of course is probably not to be done anymore more in this day and age, but it was a fascinating process because I got to see both types of instruments and all the little gadgets and gimmicks that go into a pipe organ. You can imagine a kid who sort of likes mechanical things and likes musical things. I was starting trumpet lessons and becoming fascinated with music as well. And so this was it. I had to watch this process. And one night at the parish hall, the Schoenstein Company brought a film of organ building. And I got to watch what was going on in that organ factory and seeing pipe metal poured out on a big table. And oh boy, that was it. I just thought that was fascinating stuff. And so later there was an old theater organ in our town, and I talked the manager into letting me work on the organ. I assured him I knew all about it and how to do it. And he put me off for almost 2 years, and finally he just got sick and tired of my badgering, and he gave me a key. He said, come in on Saturday and you can work on the organ. Well, then I had to try to work on the organ. So I called Schoenstein and asked them some questions, and I called, I read some books and this and that, and started working on the organ. And actually it worked out pretty well. I got the thing going. And then when I was in high school and college, I worked part-time for a San Francisco organ builder, not Schoenstein's, but another one, helped installing Moeller organs. And when I went to college, I did my master's thesis on the organ industry in business school. I went to the University of California for an MBA. And my father said, don't go in that organ business. It's a crazy business. Don't even think about going into that. And if you do go into it, wait until you can do it right and have some business experience before you do that. So I followed his advice. I'm glad I did. So I went to work for Procter & Gamble Company and then Booz Allen and Hamilton Management Consultants. And then I got in, because of my continuing interest in music, I got interested in arts management. And I was one of the first sort of out of college type arts managers, and I ran the Oakland Symphony Orchestra as executive director, and then went on my own as an independent consultant in that field. And then finally, the Schoenstein Company reached their 100th anniversary, and one of the Schoenstein members of the family said, you know, Jack, if you're still interested in the organ business, you might be able to buy the company. So I started the process and bought the company on their 100th anniversary, and that's the story. I've been fascinated. It's the most wonderful thing to do. All of my friends from business school say, well, Jack, we wish we could do what you do because it looks like so much more fun than what we do. Originally, it was in Germany. Our company started in the mid-19th century in Germany in the Black Forest, a town called Villingen. And they started as makers of wooden pipes for other organ builders and even for cuckoo clock makers or anybody who wanted wooden pipes. And then they started a company to produce orchestrions. The orchestrion is an automatic playing organ used in homes or restaurants or public places, much like a player piano, except as a player organ. And they made those in Germany and shipped them all over the world, including the United States. The founder of our firm, who was one of the members of the German firm, came over here in 1868 to install a couple of these orchestrion instruments, liked it here and stayed, and after working for another California organ builder for a while, started his own independent company in 1877. And so that's the origin of our firm.
And that original company that you purchased in 1977 was based in San Francisco, correct?
Yeah, we were in San Francisco in several locations, including a very, very nice purpose-built organ factory that was put up in 1928, right in the heart of San Francisco. In 2004, we decided to move out of downtown San Francisco to a beautiful industrial park setting in Benicia, which is about 35 miles northeast of San Francisco. And it's been a wonderful thing because we now have a large facility with 30,000 square feet and all the facilities needed for modern pipe organ production.
And how many employees do you have there at the company?
We have 12.
So describe to us what a visitor to your shop would see.
Well, our shop is a very modern facility based on a lot of study of a lot of other organ shops. All my colleagues in the organ business were very kind to give me ideas and hints and show me their places, and I've been to all of the organ factories and here and a lot of them overseas as well. We tried to combine all the things we learned about how to make a nice organ factory in our building here. It's worked out very, very well. It's spacious and has all the equipment we need and is a pleasure to work in.
And so the company you bought must be very different from the one you run today.
It is different. We are larger, and we have progressed into a really national company. It was previously we were a really regional outfit, a west of the Rockies kind of company. And we've also progressed into this symphonic style of organ building.
Tell us some about that. What would be, well, I don't want to say the standard Schoenstein organ, but what would be some traits of this symphonic style organ that you build today?
Well, our number one interest is in a breadth of tonal variety and dynamic range. That's number one. We like to get that even as tiny little instruments, which we love building, by the way. Little ones are absolutely fascinating because it's the toughest job in the world to make a little organ sound big and make it have variety and color and dynamic expression. So when you achieve that on a little instrument, it's a great, great feeling of accomplishment. But beauty of tone, that's number one. Something that is attractive. So many organ tones are unattractive. We like to avoid that and have sounds that are beautiful and pleasing. And one special reason for that is that a church organ is an unusual instrument. It's about the only instrument or group or instrumental ensemble, which I really think of it as an instrumental ensemble, the pipe organ, that's heard by the same people, played by the same people, accompanying the same people, every week, year after year after year, sometimes generation after generation. You know, it's the same sound every week. And if it isn't interesting, and if it isn't beautiful, and it doesn't have variety, how boring could that be? So church organs are often really boring. And my idea is a church organ should be a lively musical instrument that is full of variety and interest and keeps people happy with the sound of the instrument over a long time. So I see that's number one with us, beauty of tone and variety of tone and expression, the ability to make an organ sound just as expressive as an orchestra.
You know, in talking with Chris Marks and Tom Trenny in Lincoln about the organ at First Plymouth Congregational, they both commented on how expressive the instrument is. You can take it from just the softest little whisper to a big loud roar. How are the ways you accomplish that on that organ and on your other instruments?
Well, one of the ones that seems to have been very effective and is our so-called double expression system. One problem with the organ is being able to get expression that's going greater than the normal, which is really mezzo piano or piano through double forte. I like to see if we can go from triple piano to triple forte when needed. The way we decided to make that happen is with a process with a system called double expression. It's very simple. We put the loudest and the softest voices of a division in a separate swell box inside the main box. So in the swell division is the most common place where this is done. And so you have the normal voices of the swell division, the diapasons, strings, and flutes, mainly out in the main swell box. And then behind the main swell box is a second swell box, completely separate, speaking into the main box. It contains the very loud chorus reeds, such as trombone, trumpet, and clarion, and also the most powerful mixture, perhaps, and the very softest ethereal strings, or flutes, celestes. And with that system, and using, we have a swell shoe for each of those sets of shades, you can start with both boxes closed and have almost inaudible soft strings in the background, and then slowly bring those up, add the other ones in the main division, then close the inner division, adding in the reeds, bringing those up, and so on and so forth, and going back and forth until you build a true crescendo from triple piano to triple forte. It's a little hard to describe without looking at an instrument and seeing how it works, but it is very effective and is used. It's really very important in the church organ because of the need for accompaniment versatility.
Is the system any more technically challenging for an organist to operate?
Everybody thinks it is until they try it. Usually an organist who's interested in it and wants to do it can learn it and master it in 10 to 15 minutes. You just simply have to get used to the idea and try it a bit, and they just they love it. It's really not a difficult thing to do at all.
Tell us about the action that your company employs in its organs.
We use electropneumatic action, and it's distinguished from other actions in that it's what's called a unit action. That is, every single pipe, with exception of mixtures, which are tied together, but every single pipe has its own action, its own valve. We do that because the organ pipe is just an inert piece of metal or wood, and it can't vary its response to the wind system. So therefore, we believe that the wind system should be absolutely identical every time the pipe is played. And the only way to achieve that is to have an individual valve for each pipe. So that is our system. It's called the unit system, or individual valve system, run by electropneumatic power.
You're listening to At the Organ.
And we're talking with Jack Bethards, president and tonal director of the Schoenstein Organ Company. Jack, tell us about your consoles. Your company's known for very well thought out, well designed consoles.
Well, the console is critical to the sound of an organ, because if an organist is sitting as a console he doesn't like the sound of the organ either. And so we believe comfort at the console is critical. Organ playing is terribly difficult. It's the most difficult of all instruments to play. It's fighting you every step of the way. Every organ's different. Organs are complicated with so many stops and so many controls, they just require real genius to play properly. So my thought is the console better be as easy to manipulate as possible. So we put a lot of effort into trying to design a console that's easy to operate and is pleasant to sit at and is beautiful. I think it should be beautiful too. The eye encourages the ear. You know, if it's an attractive console, the sound is always seems a little better. So that's our idea, to make a console that's easy to play.
We started our conversation with you talking about First Plymouth Congregational in Lincoln, but what are some other landmark instruments of your company that you like to refer people to?
St. Paul's Case Seat, the Anglican Church in Washington, D.C. That's certainly one of our landmarks. It was just built just before the Lincoln organ, and it's not as large, but it's still quite a substantial organ. The church has an extremely well-developed music program with a very, very fine professional choir and just the top-notch Anglican music every week. And we're very honored to have an organ that accompanies that service. And that's certainly a beautiful organ. It has been recorded. We have a very, very large instrument at St. Martin's Church in Houston, Texas. That organ was recently selected by Thomas Murray to record his transcription of the Franck D minor symphony, and that's going to be released fairly soon. That's quite a nice instrument and a very nice acoustic. We have a very large one at Park City's Presbyterian Church in Dallas that is going to be recorded soon, we hope. In New York City, we had a run of six instruments in a row. Christ and St. Stephen's Church, which is a small instrument, very, very versatile, in a small church on the west side. Over on the east side, we have two instruments at St. James Church, a balcony organ, very much like Lincoln, a balcony organ and a big chancel instrument. Then we have a studio organ for Paul Jacobs at Juilliard School. And then two organs, again, balcony and sanctuary, at Fordham University. So those are some recent ones. There are many others, but those come to mind immediately.
There are many others. Your company has produced 167 organs, 79 of those are under your tenure. The latest one, Opus 167, is actually headed here to St. Louis, to Ledoux Chapel, an instrument I'm excited to get to hear very soon when it's complete. Are there any new projects coming up that you can tell us about?
Well, we have some very, very interesting projects coming up that I can't talk about, unfortunately, but so a very, very large, fascinating instrument in the Deep South, and quite large one. We are also in the planning process for an organ in London, England, in the oldest church in the city of London, St. Bartholomew the Great, because London is so rich with wonderful organs, they want something different, and so they want an American symphonic organ, and that'll be a fascinating job. And we have many others. We're doing another very interesting, unusual job right here near us in California, reproducing tonally a Murray M. Harris organ of 1912 using the basis of the church's organ, which was a Murray M. Harris, and enlarging it and bringing it back. It unfortunately had been changed a bit, bringing it back to the original character that you would have found in a 1912 Murray M. Harris organ. Very fascinating project. We're going to make a console that looks exactly like a Murray M. Harris organ of that period and so on. So that'll be a fun project, very unusual for us and interesting.
I always like to ask organ builders to talk about some of their hobbies and things they like to do outside of building organs.
Oh, outside organ building. Music is my number one interest. I'm a life member of the Musicians Union Local 6 of San Francisco, and still do quite a bit of playing, some conducting and so on. And I have an interest in various types of music, from symphonic through the, let's say, well, I'll give you a current interest of art songs of the early part of the century. I'm doing a recording project now with a very fine tenor and small orchestra, and doing the art songs that were very popular and typical in radio and recordings in the early part of the 20th century. So music is my number one interest outside the mechanics of organ building.
What advice would you give to someone who's currently searching for an organ builder?
I think the most important thing in selecting an organ builder is to go listen to organs and find which one really tugs your heartstrings. That's a term. I remember one of our clients said, I said, why did you pick us? She said, your organ tugged my heartstrings. I said, well, that's good enough for me. I said, that's what you got to do. Here, if an instrument just hits you and makes you say, boy, that is beautiful, it's wonderful, it makes me happy, that is what you should do. So if our organ does that, we're the place to be, because we'll do that for you. We'll go all out to make an organ you love. But our style might not be what pulls your heartstrings. And so there are lots of other really good builders in this country. We have a tremendous organ culture in America, best in the world. We can do anything here. So you can have a builder that can do anything you want. But if you hear one of our organs and like the sound, that's what we will do for you.
Normally I would stop there, but you said we have an unstoppable organ culture. There are so many people that would argue saying that the pipe organ is on its way out and that the culture and the music are dying. But you say that's not the case.
Well, I think the pipe organ will always be with us. It's a different picture, however, quite different from when I was first interested in it, when organs were being shipped from factories once a week, and they were sitting on railroad sidings waiting to be installed. It was a very different picture. Now, the organ is an instrument for the connoisseur, and I think there are lots and lots of people who love the pipe organ, but it's not a necessity as it used to be. It used to be purchased by churches as along with the heating system or anything else they needed, they had to have an organ. Well, now, having to have a pipe organ or a good pipe organ is only for the people who really appreciate it and understand it. And there are plenty of those around, but it's simply not a volume business as it used to be. It's now a specialty we might call luxury business. It's for people who want the best and appreciate it. And I think there'll always be those people. I see a strong future for the organ, but in a little different format than it existed back in the 1950s.
Thank you for joining me today for this rerun episode of At the Organ. My thanks go to Jack Bethards for his time and for sharing his story. My thanks also go to Bill Bentley Productions for help in producing today's show. Information about the music you heard today can be found on our website, attheorgan.com. While you're there, if you've enjoyed today's show, why not leave a comment on our website? The music you're hearing now is the finale from Louis Vierne's Symphony No. 6, Opus 59. It was performed by John Cummins on the Schoenstein organ of First Plymouth Congregational Church in Lincoln, Nebraska. We hope you'll be joining us for our live broadcast of the dedication of the Schoenstein organ at Ladue Chapel Presbyterian Church next Sunday, March 6th at 3 p.m. Central Time. You'll find links to Scott Detra's biography, information about the Ladue Chapel organ, as well as links to organlive.com and the program for next Sunday's concert, all on our website at theorgan.com. Until next week, I'm Brent Johnson.
At the Organ is a production of the Organ Media Foundation. For more information about supporting the foundation or sponsoring an episode of At the Organ, go to organmedia.org. Thank you for listening, and we'll meet you here next week at the Organ.